Good morning, everybody. Stephanie, would you call the meeting to order?
Joy Still.
Here.
David Happ.
Here.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell. Mike Smith. Deb Rouge.
Here. Well, we do have a quorum, right? Okay. Are there any additions to the agenda? Citizen input today. Dr. Fowler and Mrs. O'Connor, any CCMHB input today?
We're hoping to learn from you before our meeting tonight. Thank you.
Well, good luck with that. Turning to page 3, we have minutes from the February 22nd meeting. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes as presented?
I move that we accept them as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, under President's comments, I only have one thing to bring up today, and it is that David Wetherow, I don't know, I'm sure some of you are familiar with David Wetherow, with Community Works, will be in town in May, and he is a facilitator and trainer in person-centered planning, really a pioneer in person-centered planning, in microboard development, innovative service development and community living. He will be here with Vicki Nicewander's IAMC Building Inclusive Communities group. And we have the opportunity to piggyback on his presence and potentially meet with him, pick his brain if we'd like. And I think there are two potential days that we could do that. Thursday, 6 p.m. on May 4th. That night, the Lyle Shields room is not available, so an alternative to that meeting time would be Friday at 1 p.m., May 5th. So I would like everybody to, you know, if you're interested in hearing more from David or available or, you know, those dates work, please let staff know, and we'll see if we can set something up. Executive Director's report, Lynn.
Okay, I think my report will focus on mistakes that I made in the board packet. I think that's a good place to start. And then, so then when we get there, you can actually have discussion instead of what in the world does this mean? So the most dramatic mistake is on page 18. It's in my from my notes when I went to the conference in Washington, D.C. I was actually at two conferences, and the second one is the one that I go to each year, and the last day is almost always devoted to developmental disabilities. So that's, you know, lots of people have already gotten on the plane, and so it's a small room, but the content is amazing. And so when the speaker started rolling, I got a little too excited, and I miswrote how much we're expecting to pay national healthcare costs in 2017 as $3.5 million. It's supposed to be $3.5 trillion. So that's a really big mistake. The point of that detail is that a significant portion of Medicaid costs are in long-term supports and services. Those are for people with disabilities and elderly. And then we talk a lot in this room about the new regulations associated with long-term supports and services. Some of those are person-centered planning, conflict-free case management, the integrated settings regulations, which almost all of the states are still trying to figure out. So it was important to get that note about the total cost right, and I'm really sorry about that one. But anyway, I was just too excited about the data. So then the other error is kind of a funny error in the report about people who have not yet established the technical eligibility for services. So this is a bigger discussion, but in there, in one section on page 10, at the bottom of the section, it says there are 97 unduplicated persons. But then if you look at the paragraph that heads it off, it would appear to total only 91 people. So if 91 people is the duplicated number and 97 is the unduplicated number, it doesn't make sense. But the problem is I failed to put in bold in that paragraph an additional 10 people that Community Choices chose to report on, even though that they weren't required to. They chose to report on them because of the direction many people take from that program, which starts as a support network, but then typically leads to more intensive services. So this is a good step. And I meant to include those 10 people. That gives you a duplicated count of 101. So then when you're comparing 97 with 101, that's really nice that we're really seeing people pretty specifically with one or two programs, one or two agencies. And so I thought that was a good result, but I'm sorry for the appearance of an error there. It's just because I didn't bold it. Anyway, I think otherwise, I think there's just about enough detail from me already in the board packet. So, okay.
Okay, staff reports are being deferred, I understand.
Because of the work on the applications and program summaries, this is really dominant.
Okay. Oh.
Deferred because of the focus on reviewing funding applications, and that's been our dominant activity.
Okay, consultant report. We have listed here that there will be an oral report on the 11th Disability Resource Expo. Okay, Lynn has it.
The steering committee has confirmed the date of the next expo, which will be April 7, 2018. The new venue is also confirmed at the Vineyard Church. So because that's a pretty different venue, they have an event they're working on for this year to get people sort of used to the Vineyard as an expo location. So it's a meet and greet for exhibitors and for members of the board and for interested stakeholders on May 4th from 4 to 6 at the Vineyard. And I think that State Treasurer Mike Ferrix has confirmed that he will be there to speak about the rollout of the ABLE Act. And then in addition to his presentation, they'll be doing tours of the new venue so that the exhibitors and stakeholders are comfortable with it. And then I think there's save the date and meet the greet invitations went out yesterday. So if you don't have those, steering committee member may be able to forward that to you. Okay, that's it. The event this year is May 4th from 4 to 6. So that would maybe answer your earlier question about whether to book David Wetherow for May 4th at 6 o'clock or Friday. So I think we should look at Friday at 1 o'clock, and we have this room if we want it.
That's a better option that we have the room in.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. All right. That's it.
Okay. Agency information. No? No agency information today? This will be the fastest meeting on record if we keep going at this clip.
I was wondering if there's any update anyone can give about the budget or the non-existent budget that actually in this time when we're looking at so many things that need to be done and disability services, it's easy to get to a point where you don't really think anything good is going to happen. And we've been going through this for quite a long time. And Dale, I know that you are a member of the, is it IRF? Yeah. Do you have anything at all that is going on that might be helpful for us to call and say to people that need to be told?
Well, hopefully I'll know a little bit more in a couple hours. I'm leaving as soon as this meeting's over to go to the IRF board committee meetings and our IRF board meetings at noon. The actual budget itself, you know, it's the grand bargain all of us have heard about, of whether they can get them to come back to table on that. I think the only optimistic news I can give at this point in time is that the awareness we raised on the staff shortage is truly at the front of everybody's mind, and how that or when that will transfer into potential staff wage increases or that type of stuff or rate increases, we don't know. But it's real interesting in all this tough times, I think there is some awareness to that. The real concern I have from my evaluation of that, though, is all the talk on the ACA, which is very, very important. And I'm just concerned that the governor could use that. So if they find out that we're all in the same problem, then the governor can say, well, see, I can't do anything about this because we're all in the same thing, when we know that Illinois is so much worse off than the rest. But that it could easily say, okay, if the ACA comes and it starts taking services away from all people with disabilities, then it'll take some of the pressure off of him, I believe. Does that make sense to you? In other words, if the feds say that ACA and everybody says now that it's going to hurt all the elderly, it's going to hurt all the people with disabilities, and they say yes, but we're all in this pain together, then as he makes decisions, he doesn't have to necessarily say, oh, yeah, well, we're all there, but there's not enough money, and that's the concern I have. And so we'll be talking again at our board meeting today. I personally am going to continue to push that we need to put more of our effort on what we can control, and that is the wage and the staff shortage issue, not to ignore the ACA issue. And our state association is putting a lot of time and effort in that. But if we put the wage and the staff shortage issue on the back burner, then we lose an opportunity we have there. So I think that that's the biggest thing. But the actual budget itself, the only thing I can say is as they go through it, we're at least at the table now. And there's going to be some hearings on that issue. And the final thing I'll end with is there's also a lot of bills in there this time because as a result of the Chicago Tribune articles that we talked about months ago, there's a lot of bills in there to address some issues, some perceived and some real, on CILA. So there's some bills in there that are very good and add additional protections. There are some that are just so redundant that's going to cause more staff work. And my real concern there is that more money is going to be put on watching the pot instead of making sure it's put into staff that need to be there to provide the quality service that needs to be. So that's the thing we've got to really watch, is that balance between protecting people and not having so many people watching their services instead of actually providing the services. And so our state association has taken positions on each one of those differently based upon those priorities.
Because our state association is trying to, you know, as a large group, file witness slips, you know, and to be consistent with the work of IRF and IABH. It's hard to keep track of the names, but so if you have specific recommendations for all of those, because there were so many and some of them really do appear redundant, some of them look expensive.
Yeah. I shared my personal ones with you.
I did use those committee.
But I wasn't speaking on behalf of IRF, but those were my personal ones. But I will give you on a few of them that it's in our weekly news notes, and I'll give you that, and they'll say oppose, support, neutral, and that type of stuff, and I'll start sharing that with you.
Okay.
So anything else?
No, I just think that would be very helpful. If I'm going to make calls to representatives, and it would be good to have very specific information. You know, there's that five calls a day
Yeah. I don't want to be redundant, so if Lynn's doing it, I won't. But if that's the desire, I can start sharing you whenever there's you just have to click the button if you support those type issues. Click it, put your home address in, and file witness slips. If Lynn's not sharing that with you, I will. If I don't want to duplicate, that's if you'd like that, I'd be glad to share that with your boards, but I don't want to do that without.
Oh, no,
I
didn't do it. Do it.
Yes, so, okay.
Is that for both your boards? I'll share it with you. I'll share it with you, and then you can get the link out. How's that? Let's
do it
that way.
You know, I was just thinking, I send them so many emails, it might be, you know, they're a little bit deluged with stuff from me, so they might see it from you and go, oh, this is a legislative action.
Okay. All right. I'll start trying to include you in some of those action alerts. The problem we have is we also have to be a little bit more selective. If it's, when we start doing staff, you can overwhelm them. And it's not that it's not important, but you have to decide if you're really going to push that button and do that work, state issues versus the ACA. And I made that decision yesterday. I chose not to have our staff flood them on the ACA issues because our staff are not going to be as invested in that, and you can only use so much of their energy when you want them to do it, and I want them to stay excited and stay pushing on the staff shortage issue, because as soon as we solve that, we can get them better pay and we can serve more people that are waiting for service, and that's my highest priority.
I think that would be very helpful if you would do that.
Okay, thank you.
Is there some, and this might be a Kim question too, so if you're, I bet you'll both know. Is there some measure of protection for the DD, for some of the DD services because of the court order and court orders and the Ligas class?
From what I've heard, if they go to block grants, no.
Okay.
I think she's probably right, but the answer is unknown at this point in time. And I think that would possibly be tested again in court before a final decision on that would be made. Trump would have to weigh in.
Okay.
No.
Well, the issue around the ACA, and this is just, I have a state-by-state chart of the damage, the potential damage per state. It's very hard to read, but basically Illinois is in one of the worst positions when it comes to, if we went to a Medicaid block grant based on per capita caps, because we underspend and our reimbursement rates are at least among the lowest, if not the lowest, in some of the categories that where the most money is spent. So a per capita cap, whether it was based on 2016, 2017, or 2008, doesn't matter. We are in more trouble than almost every other state. If that happens.
Yeah, that goes back again that we've not, as you just said, we've not done a good job of capturing, and so therefore the match, the enhanced match, we're not even close to some of these other states, and so that's why we'll get hit a lot worse. Okay, yours.
Thank you. I'm Kim Baldry from the Regional Planning Commission Independent Service Coordination Team. I was just going to share that myself and another ISC have just completed the discovery process and person-centered plan for a few individuals on our caseload. We are piloting that through DHS, and the rest of the ISC team will be trained on April 12th and 13th. And as of July 1st, 2017, as an individual's annual ISP meeting comes due, we will begin that discovery process and person-centered plan with those individuals.
So, okay, for ISCs, I heard the NOFO is now delayed till mid-2018. Is that right?
At the latest, July 1st, 2018. At the latest. And we have no information on that. They aren't sharing much. We had a site visit with some fellows from Harvard Kennedy Law School. They went to all 17 of the ISC agencies, just had a general discussion on how we do things, our interactions with the division, lots of back and forth questions, and they were going to take all that information, compile it, and share it with the division. And it's my understanding that the NOFA will be developed from the gathering of that information. Yes.
And then a predicted PUNS draw? And it seems almost silly to ask, but
it has been stated that there will be a PUNS draw in March. I haven't gotten a list or anything at this point. My suspicion will be that March 30th, March 31st will be the date on the letters. I think last year they said punch drawn March. The letters were actually mailed out at the end of April. But Director Fenton did state that in his newsletter, so I feel like there's no going back now.
Okay, item 12, our financial report. I'd like to move that the claims report be approved as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, it is approved. Under new business, do we have any integration transition success stories to share today?
Good morning. Over the past several months, as we've been helping people connect with the community, we've continued to get input from people on the direction they want to take their services and areas of interest. This week we've started with several new groups, all based on the interest expressed by people who are participating. It ranges everything from exercise groups to volunteerism. One of my favorites is the volunteerism group. They're actually going to explore and investigate different interests that are near and dear to their heart, different causes, and then they're going to look at opportunities to volunteer at those locations. We've got people who want to learn how to cook, the art of making friendship, which will touch on many things, including navigating social media, which is huge. Our self-advocacy group continues to grow. I think I mentioned in the past that we had a group who developed a presentation on what they want from people who support them, and they presented to DHS. They've recently presented to a University of Illinois class, and they're also going to present at the ARC Leadership Conference at the end of April, and we continue to get requests based on people who have been to the who listen to the presentation, and we get more requests at that time. So their calendar continues to fill, but again, it's pretty exciting. People are excited about the opportunities upcoming. On a different note, TPC just had their biannual roundtable, and about 25 providers discussed the services that they provide, and there were about 80 people who attended that. So, thank you.
Okay, turning to page 9 in the packet, we have the IDDD eligibility briefing memorandum. And is there any feedback from the agencies on that document?
I think the people who helped me the most with this document are here. So if the board has any questions, they may be able to answer them. I felt really positive about this outcome. This, what's not in here but was in last month's memo, was that until the middle of 2015, there was no way really that agencies could get the eligibility that was required by our funding guidelines. So just because the state wasn't moving to, the state wasn't doing eligibility determinations unless you were selected from PUNS. And so for many years, there was no movement at all. And then under LIGAS, there was some movement, but then it would only be for people who were just about to receive state funding. So our funding guidelines were actually presenting part of the problem, and I wanted to see how big the problem was before we did anything crazy like change our funding guidelines. And I was encouraged by this result that, you know, as long as we're patient, because this is a lot of people for the one staff person at ISC to assess, but she is working through them, you know, so we can ask for an update in a few months and see how far along it is. But I think that a lot of these people are going to be found eligible, and we are not going to really need to do anything else with this issue, but it was important to get clarity about that. And I think one side effect, you know, I wasn't looking for but was very happy to see, was that that level of duplication in the one category was very low. And the kind of duplication I think people are concerned about would be a duplication where, say, a person is receiving apartment services through DSC and also community living at Community Choices. Those programs are similar. They're not identical. It could happen, and it has happened, but it usually meant that the person was going from one to the other, and that, you know, just during the quarter they both happened to show up. So another place that you might consider that really a duplication would be in the employment programs. They are also different across agencies, so people might have reason to go from one to the other, but we might not want to see somebody enrolled in three employment support programs at once. So those are the kind of things that get my attention. I didn't see a lot of that either, so it wasn't intended to be a study of that, but I felt really, I'm very grateful for the support that agencies gave on this, and they did it quickly, too.
I just want to add to that I'm extremely appreciative of this information. The more information we have about what people are doing and how they're utilizing our services, the better we are able to plan. So this was a lot of really good information for me, so I really appreciate that. And just speaking to on page 11, talking about how important it is to have documentation as to people's preferences, it's so nice to have Annette sit and tell us about all of her, you know, the self-advocates and how the individuals being served are able to now have a stronger voice in their programming that's based on their interests. That's really good to hear. The other thing I wanted to mention is that at the bottom of page 11, we have information about Champaign County residents that comes from review of DHS PUNS data that lists their needs in order from highest to lowest, with transportation being their highest need. But then when you actually talk locally with, I think, 306 people we have on here, in the ISC survey, it's really interesting to see what the individuals themselves want versus other people who potentially might be reporting state data. That's really helpful to know, too, for local planning. So I really appreciate having this information. Thank you. Okay, number 14, old business. Do we have an employment first update today?
The biggest news in employment first is that Chike Coleman has resigned. And yes, his last day is actually Friday. Stephanie Davenport has been hired to fill that position, and she actually was already on board as an employment specialist, so I've kind of robbed Peter to pay Paul.
She has an extensive business background that I think we're going to benefit from quite a bit. And just as a side note, she's also a published author. I'm not quite sure how that'll help us, but I'm sure it will.
Yeah, and Ashley, she continues to be on the project and is excited to get to know Stephanie and sort of make a few tweaks and move forward.
Annette, you said Stephanie Davenport, right? Is that right? Okay, thank you. Okay, for information, we have a summary of mid-year progress on the special initiatives, our two new programs this past funding year. Any comments or input on those? Okay, and then moving on to the summary of the NACBHDD Legislative and Policy Conference. You touched on that a little bit earlier, Lynn. Did you want to add anything to that?
Just two things.
Okay.
So there's one thing I can't be very specific about, and the other thing that I can't be very specific about. The first one is that, as I was telling you earlier, I was very excited about one of the very last presentations, and the presenter sent me his PowerPoint. It's just chock full of really important data about healthcare costs and DD and the value of employment supports and sort of a comparison of investments in things like employment supports. Really great. And then he said, it's proprietary. Don't share it. So I have a copy of it at my office if you're interested. Come over and look at it with me. It's amazing data. I'm sure we could get him to come here and present on it to us, but I don't know if there's a sentiment around having that. We could maybe plan sort of a longish event, like a retreat or something in the fall, and talk about getting someone like him, you know, or maybe he could create a document that I can share with you. But so that's one thing. Come over and look at it if you're interested. Then the other is, one of the presenters, and I did include some notes from this particular presentation in my notes in this. One of the presenters on her way into the room to do the presentation was told that she could not share information about what she does with specific information about what she does. And what she does, she talks to me sometimes on the phone. What she does is evaluate the state transition plans. So we were, at the very last minute, we were denied insight into what's going on with our particular state's transition plans. So I don't know why, but a couple of presenters had that experience where they were kind of shut down. If they work for the federal government, they were told on the way in the door. Anyway, that one was so relevant, and I do rely on her for information about that. It's not that we can do much to speed up the state's progress, but I like knowing when the public comment periods are held, because that's been a problem with Illinois' policy work. So, anyway.
Okay, the last two agenda items are that we have a meeting schedule at the back of the book, as usual, and also the Ligas Family Advocate Program acronym sheet for information. And I think that's it. So do we have a motion to adjourn? Are there any board announcements, first of all? I didn't. Okay, so then a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? We are adjourned.